We've been doing something unusual. You know, we've been going through Ecclesiastes for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And what's really unusual about the series and about the book is that essentially, like, the book of Ecclesiastes is written through the eyes of a skeptic. It's a book that's written to look at life through the eyes of someone who doesn't believe or someone who doesn't know what they believe. And the question that's asked again and again is, if there's no God, if all that there is everything that we see, everything that's here on this earth, can we find meaning? Can we find purpose? Can we live good and productive lives? That's the answer that keeps getting asked again and again. Right? Can we find meaning? Can we find purpose if all that there is everything that we see here? And you know, that's an important question because as human beings, we need purpose, we need meaning, we need something that's pushing us, something that's driving us, something that we see in front of us. And if you don't find it in God, if there's no God, if there's no purpose outside of this universe, we have to find it somewhere. We can't simply go along living a life that is meaningless. You know, as much as some people might think that that's possible, it's incredibly destructive. And so that's the question that's being asked again and again, is if there's no God, if this life is all that there is, can we find meaning? Can we find purpose? Now, the last few weeks, we've been looking at issues like this. We've been asking, can we find the ultimate meaning in a life of pleasures? And we see that that's fleeting. We asked last week, can we find ultimate meaning in our work, in our achievements? And we see that there's an issue with that. Going forward, next week, for the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at things like an intellectual life, looking at wisdom, looking at the pursuit of justice, and then as we get close to the end of the series, we'll conclude and look at how are we supposed to live then. So that's kind of what's looking in front of us. This week, we're talking about wealth. We're talking about money. And what I mean by that is, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with money, but the Bible again and again comes back and it says that there's something at issue with living for the love of money, right? Making money your ultimate meaning, your ultimate purpose, your ultimate answer for the things that are wrong in your life. And so we're going to be looking at it through that lens. You might hear this and go, well, I mean, this sounds like it's just for people who are wealthy, right? If we're talking about money, if we're talking about wealth, living and loving money, that must be just for people who are wealthy, not for me. It's actually for all of us. You know, you can love and desire and place money at the very top of the pyramid, whether you have a lot or whether you have very little. You know, in some way, it doesn't matter how much you have. In a very powerful way, whether you have a lot or little, it can still be your reason for being, your meaning, your purpose. And I want to say this, like, before you get uncomfortable, because this is a really uncomfortable subject, you know, like, talking about money is very, very uncomfortable. Before everyone gets really uncomfortable and starts looking for reasons to go to the bathroom or, like, leave or that type of thing, there are a couple things I wanted to say. Before everyone gets uncomfortable, money is one of the biggest issues that people have with the church. People tend to say one of their problems that people have about the church is they say that church is all about money. I don't think that's exactly true, but I do want to say this since we're talking about money. I want to make a promise that today I'm not going to guilt you. You know, we are going to have offering after the sermon. I'm not going to do anything to guilt you, to making you feel like you need to put something in the offering plate. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you as honestly as I can that, you know, this week, you know, we'll put no pressure on you to give, to feel like you have to give. Next week's a different story. But like this week, you know, no pressure. And I would encourage you, you know, if you do feel any kind of undue, awkward pressure to give, I would ask you not to give. We try to say that regularly when we do take offering is, again, if you're new or if you do feel this kind of compulsion by us to give, then play it safe and don't give. There's something very important about giving out of the right heart. And so today, I'm going to try not to pressure, not to guilt you. And today actually isn't about giving. It's not about tithing. It's not about giving. We're going to talk about money in a different context. What we're going to actually talk about is the fact that, especially in our culture, you know, what we are is we're a democracy, but we're also a democracy that's built on capitalism. And what capitalism means is that to some degree, everything at some level, to some degree, is about money. At some point, everything boils down to money. I mean, that's what capitalism essentially is. In our culture especially, it's easy to think that money is the answer, or money is the purpose, or money is the reason. And what I want you to do this week is, as we go through Ecclesiastes 5 and a little bit of chapter 6, I think all of us need to examine that. We need to consider that. And it is an important topic because, again, especially in our culture, it's so easy to make our lives about the pursuit of money and wealth, thinking that that is meaning, purpose, or the answer that we're looking for. And the psalmist actually goes about kind of looking at that. So as we go through Ecclesiastes chapter 5, we're going to kind of break the passage down into three segments. And we're going to first look at the promise of wealth. Wealth makes an incredible promise to us. It's the thing that's alluring. It's the thing that pulls us in. It's the thing that sometimes tricks us. But we'll see first the promise of wealth. Second, we're going to see the problem with wealth. And the writer is careful to tell us that there are issues with making wealth our purpose, our drive, our pursuit. And ultimately, we'll see the truth that we all need, the wealth that we all need, the thing that we need that really will enrich us. So first, the promise of wealth. Second, the problem with wealth. And third, the true wealth that we all need. Okay. So first, the promise of wealth. You know, one of the things that kind of stands out again about us and about our culture is not only does everything boil down to money, there's something that is powerful about the allure of money. Now, there's something very, very powerful about that. You know, for what we're reading, the book of Ecclesiastes, the author, for most scholars, they think it's Solomon, and he presents himself as this teacher, as this wise man, as this philosopher. And essentially what we talked about last week is that he's a man who, both in his story, but also in real life, he has amassed an incredible wealth. We know historically, and we also know from his own words, that he's amassed a wealth that is beyond what the kings before him have amassed. And essentially, you know, if you want to put it into monetary terms, in a lot of ways, he's the Jeff Bezos of his era, right? He has so much wealth. You know, you think about a guy like Jeff Bezos, and you kind of think, what do you do with that much money, right? Like, how do you even begin to think about spending that kind of money? You know, just it's this astronomical amount that most of us, we couldn't even dream of. And that's basically where this author is. He's in a place where he has been successful. He has amassed this incredible wealth, and it's allowed him to not just live a life of luxury, but to do whatever his heart desires. You know, we have a huge lottery drawing coming up that's going to be on Monday, and that's what some of us dream. Well, that's hopefully not what all of us dream about. But for those, you know, people who jump in and buy a couple tickets, I mean, that's the dream, right? To have so much that you don't have to worry about anything anymore. To have so much that you can not just have luxury, but that you can do whatever you want. That's what he's talking about. That's what he's thinking about. And my question is this: what is it about money that's so alluring? Because it's actually more than just the promise of being able to spend and use and buy things that you want. There's something that's deeply kind of alluring about it that's beyond the things that it can tangibly pay for. You know, there's something alluring about money. And I think what it is that it reaches down and it promises more than just products. There's something about money that speaks to status, that speaks to power, that speaks to ease or pleasure, that speaks to security. And again, like in a larger sense, you know, if you want to take the big picture kind of look, I think in a larger sense, in a very powerful way, money or wealth is proof. Now you go, you ask, like, proof of what? In a very powerful sense, I mean, think about it. When you've amassed this wealth, what do you feel like? Well, one of the things you feel is you feel, I've made it. Right? There's something about it that tells you on the inside, you say, I've made it. Not that I know from personal experience, because I don't, but I mean, that's what a lot of people feel. There's a sense in which when people amass the wealth, they say to themselves, I'm somebody. Or now I can control my life. Or now I can fix the things that are wrong. In a larger sense, money takes on this spiritual significance. It's not just the fact that a lot of money can buy you a lot of things. There's something about money that is more than money. It speaks to power. It speaks to status. It speaks to influence. It speaks to all these different things. And in a larger sense, it becomes kind of this spiritual thing. The way that I'll explain it, and you have to kind of track with me as I use this throughout, but I think what money actually becomes for a lot of people, especially in a culture like this, is it becomes a source of their righteousness. And I know that's not a word we use a lot, but what I mean by that is it's the thing that proves to them that they're somebody. It's the thing that proves to them that they've made it. It's the thing that tells them that they're good, they're smart, that they're intelligent, that they can control things, that they're worthwhile, that their lives are worthwhile, that they're important people. You know, and a lot of times, wealth is the proof of those things for people. It's a way in which they say, I'm important, I'm valuable. There's something about me that is worthwhile. If you notice, that's a spiritual thing. Money is more than money in their minds. You know, that what they're getting from money is something they could get from God, and yet they look to their bank account and get. Let me see if I can put it another way. There's this, I haven't watched this in a long time, but I think like a couple months ago, I made my son watch, my son and my wife, we watched Rocky III together. And the reason why is, like, you know, we didn't go back and watch the first Rocky movie, and then the second, then the third, and the fourth. There's just, the third one's really cool. You have Mr. T, and then I'm trying to get him to watch Rocky IV because of the Russian thing and all that. That's a lot of fun. The first Rocky is actually really good. It's kind of artsy for me, so that's why I didn't want to go back and watch it. But there's this great kind of section in the first Rocky. So if you want to go home and watch it, it's this great kind of moment. If you remember, Rocky's, you know, he's basically trying to make his way up, and Apollo Creed is the champion, and his manager kind of sets this fight with Rocky, with this basically club fighter, and it's supposed to be this easy fight for the champion. He, you know, he has the stop and he has this easy fight, and then he moves on to, he defends his title again somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else, but you know, for Rocky, this is the chance of a lifetime. And so he's training and he's working and he's killing himself to get prepared for this fight. And there's this point in the movie where his girlfriend, Adrian, asks him this question. She says, why do you want to fight? Right? I mean, he's killing himself trying to get ready for it, pulling out all the stops. And she simply asks him, like, why do you want to fight? Why is this important to you? Now, I want you to listen to his answer. I'm not going to do like an impression of him, so you don't have to worry about that. The weird thing is, you kind of have to. Like, it's written a certain way where it's going to sound weird for me just to say it, but I'm just going to say it. This is his answer. She asks him, why do you want to fight? And this is what he says. He says, because all I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed. And if I can go the distance, you see, and that bell rings and I'm still standing, I'm going to know. See, that's why you need the accent. See, that's what he does. But he says, when that bell rings and I'm still standing, I'm going to know for the first time in my life, see, that I wasn't just another bum from the neighborhood. I think about what he's saying. He's saying, if I can get into the ring with a champion, it doesn't even matter if I win. If I can get into the ring and if I can stay standing where the fight ends and I haven't been carried out on a stretcher, I haven't been knocked out, then I'll know that I'm somebody. Right? What is that? It's righteousness. It's proof. He says, if I do this, then I'll know that my life was worth it. Then I'll know that I'm somebody. Then I'll know that my life has value. And you see, that's the allure of money. That's the allure of wealth. It isn't just that the more I have, the more I can spend. There's an allure to wealth that says, if you can get it, then there is status waiting for you. If you can get it, then you can know that your life is worthwhile, that you're somebody, that you're not just some bum from the neighborhood, but you're somebody. And you see, that's the allure. That's the promise. That's why we work ourselves to the bone. That's the larger reason why so many of us pursue wealth. We want it because it validates us. It tells us that we're worthwhile, that we're important, that we've made it. And so that's the promise. That's the promise of wealth. Here's the problem. And really quickly, like there's some detail to it, but the big problem is it can't do that for us. It doesn't do that for us. But there's stuff going on in here. It promises that. It says, if you get it, if you work for it and you get it, you achieve it, you'll prove yourself. You'll know then that you're somebody, that you're worth it, that you're not just some bum. And what the writer does is he actually goes and he says, that's not what wealth does. That's not what money does for you. It doesn't put you up on a pedestal and tell the world, hey, everyone, look at this person. They've made it. They're somebody. He actually says, it actually does something very destructive. And this is actually what I wanted to spend most of the sermon going through, is what the teacher does, what the writer does, is he says there's actually three things that wealth does to us. Three ways in which if you place your trust in it, if you place your hope in it, if you look to money, to wealth as your righteousness, if you look to it as your answer and pursue it and make it your purpose, it actually does three things to you. And three things really quickly, it says, money will make you poor, money will bring you anxiety, and ultimately money will make you powerless. Now, let's take a look at how he says that. If you go into verse 10, the writer says this. He says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them, and what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will never let him sleep. Now, I want you to hear what he's saying here. He's saying that when you live your life for money, when you make your money, when you make wealth your highest goal, your highest, the thing that you're chasing after, the answer to all your problems, when you place money at the very center of your life, wealth as your righteousness, you don't find satisfaction, you don't find fulfillment, you don't find contentment. What actually happens to you is the opposite. And if you notice, he juxtaposes these two people, the one who is wealthy and the laborer, right? The laborer is in verse 12. And what he says is, he says, you know, for verse 10, the person who is chasing after wealth, who makes money his goal, he cannot be content. He's not satisfied. He has this huge check coming in, but it doesn't fill him up. And yet here's the laborer, the guy who has very little, and yet he goes to sleep every night completely content. Right? What happens is when you make wealth your highest aim, it actually makes you impoverished. You begin to live like someone who's poor. You feel like you don't have enough. You're never satisfied, and there's no contentment in the things that you have. Right? In other words, he's saying when you make money your life's pursuit, then the more you get, the poorer you feel. And there's this very interesting dynamic. You know, for someone who doesn't have much, if money doesn't matter, all that person thinks about is all the things he or she has. When money's the one thing that you want, even when you have a lot, the only thing you think about is all the money you don't have. Right? I mean, that's a very powerful idea. You know, the psalmist says, the writer says, the pursuit of money doesn't make you rich. It actually makes you impoverished. You can't enjoy, you can't feel a sense of satisfaction. You don't feel any sense of contentment. All you ever think is, there's more out there. I need more. Where can I get it? And there's no sense in which I ever feel satisfied. You know, whenever I talk about money, I always end up talking about my father, and I don't want, you know, he passed away a few years ago, and you know, I always want to be careful kind of how I talk about him, because I don't want to make him into a caricature, but in some ways, like in my mind, he was. He came to this country with very, very little. Went to school here, went to law school after he finished college here. And I think in a lot of people's eyes, he was very, very successful for the big bulk of his career. He was the first Korean who was on the bar in this area. And so for a little while, when I was young, he was kind of a minor celebrity in certain circles. He used to be invited to politicians' houses. He used to be invited to parties. And you know, from what I hear, because I don't really remember a lot of it, you know, there was a period in my father's life where he and my mother used to go to these swanky places with powerful people, lots of status, that type of thing. And what's interesting is that for my father, his purpose in life was to make a fortune. He looked for ways he could work. He also looked for get-rich-quick schemes, anything that would get him there. And this is what happened to him, is it was never enough. As much as he had, he always thought about what he didn't have. There was never a sense in which he felt like he could slow down, in which he could enjoy, which he could be content. There was it was always a dissatisfaction. And that's what happens. When your life is about money, all you think about is what you do not have. When your life is not about money, you can be content with what you do have. You know, chasing after wealth doesn't make you rich. It makes you poor. You know, we also see that money doesn't just make us poor, it brings us anxiety. It's not fulfilling. If you go into verse 13, the author starts with another illustration. He says this. He says, verse 13, "There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again. Naked as he came, and he shall take for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so he shall go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, in much vexation, and sickness, and anger." And so the second illustration that he gives us of what money does is he says, here's this man, this father, and he's made his life all about money. It's all about wealth. It's this obsession. And in his obsession, he's actually lost it all, right? A bad venture, and he loses it all, right? Get-rich-quick scheme, throws his money in there, and it tanks, and he puts his family in peril. And, you know, it talks about the fact that, you know, when he dies, he's going to die as he came. He's going to have nothing in his hands, and there's a tragedy to it. But I think the part that I wanted to point out is in verse 17, he says, moreover, he says, besides the fact that he lost everything, that he was once rich, he's now poor, he says, besides all of that, he says, listen to what his days were like, not just as a poor person, but all the days, all his days, he eats in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and anger. Essentially, what the author is telling us is that this pursuit of wealth and even this temporary success that this man found early on didn't make his life easy. He didn't find fulfillment. He didn't find a sense of ease. Because his life was about the pursuit of wealth, all his days were filled with frustration, with stress, with anger. And that's true. Now, if wealth is the thing that you're chasing, if it's the thing that will be your answer to the things that are wrong, if it is your meaning and if your purpose, if it is the most important thing to you in your life, then as you chase it, you will feel frustration and stress and anxiety. If wealth is your meaning, if wealth is your purpose, if it's the most important thing, then when you get it, your life will still be filled with anxiety and frustration and success. If wealth is the answer, if it's your meaning or purpose, then you will feel anxiety, frustration, or stress as you try to hold on to it. And if wealth is the most important thing in your life, it is your meaning, it is your purpose, then when you lose it, you'll feel anxiety and stress and frustration. In other words, wealth never takes away. It never fills you. It never says, oh, this is so much better. The pursuit of wealth always leads to a life of stress and anxiety and frustration from the beginning till the end, and it never lets up. Pursuing money as your hope is never the answer, and it never becomes the answer. There's actually an article that was that I read a couple months back. It was in early 2020, and it was basically about how Wall Street bankers, especially as the pandemic has been kind of, as we've been coming out of the pandemic, they still rate highest among like burnout rates in terms of employment. And there was actually this story about this woman. She had been working on Wall Street as a banker for 15 years. And essentially, she had walked away from a $500,000 job because of stress. She said she got up and she just realized that she was always exhausted, always worn out, never happy. And you know, we hear that and we go, who would ever walk away from $500,000? Right? It's one thing if you have another $500,000 job waiting for you. But she said, I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it. Right? Even $500,000 every single year, she said, I couldn't take it. It wasn't worth it. When you make money your pursuit, when you make it your goal, you make it your meaning, you do not find ease. You do not find fulfillment. All you find is stress and anxiety, frustration and anger. You do not end up fulfilled. You end up broken. And there's one more that he brings up. If you go into chapter 6, he says this. He says, there is an evil that I have seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so he lacks nothing of all he desires, yet God does not give him the power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. The third thing he mentions is that not only does money make us poor, not only does money bring us anxiety, he says money makes us powerless. See, he reminds us of the fact that there's a problem with wealth. There's a problem with money. No matter how much we make, we can't take it with us. And what the most interesting part to me is he uses this phrase. He says that God does not give him the power to enjoy them. And so the picture that we're getting here is, here's a man who has become powerless. And the reason why that's so interesting to me is one of the things that we think wealth does is it gives us power. Right? It gives us the ability to control things. It gives us the ability to make decisions, to decide what we want, to do what we want, to influence things, to move things, to make decisions that will happen. And what the writer says is this. He says, you can have all the wealth that you want, all the perceived power and influence, the ability to do things, but truly you are powerless still before death and before God. You can amass a great wealth and yet have no control over your life. You can amass a great wealth and yet never get a chance to use a penny of it. There is an illusion of power that money brings. And the author says, money actually makes you powerless. Doesn't make you powerful, it makes you powerless. You are out of, you cannot control what happens to it. And the reason why, the Old Testament is very clear. Again and again in the Old Testament, we find out that what we have from God, whatever God gives us, the wealth, the money that we have, it's His. It's from His hands. And not only is it from His hands, it remains His. That's one of the reasons why in the New Testament we're told that for you and I, we are to live our lives, we are to use our resources as stewards. What is a steward? A steward who is someone who has someone else's money. And even though he has someone else's money, someone else's resources, those resources are never fully his, right? It's like when you go to a brokerage, right? You give them money and you want them to invest it. You want them to grow it into something else. The way that it works is you give your money to them, but it's not their money, right? It's still yours. And so they act in a way in which they know that it's not theirs. The Bible makes it clear that that's the way we are to view wealth, that it's not ours. If wealth and money is your meaning, is your purpose, the author says you find poverty, you find anxiety, and you find futility. Doesn't work. Third thing that we'll finish up with, and hopefully this is kind of a little happier ending, is we'll find what is the wealth that we all need. Verses 18 through 20. The author says this. He says, "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun for the few days of his life that God has given to him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possession and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart." Now, there's kind of something going on here, and it's tied in a little bit to what we were talking about last week. But essentially, what the writer is saying is that if there is no God, then eat, drink, spend, enjoy. And there is something good about that. He ties God into it, and he says that it's a gift of God, and that's one of the things we can do. And there's a truth to it, right? If there is no God, if this life is all that there is, then to some degree, there's a joy that we can have in using the things that we've been given. But the author isn't saying, he isn't telling us that we should live in a hedonistic way, right? Use your money however you want, do whatever you please. He never actually really answers the question, what should we do with our money then, right? How should we live in light of the fact that chasing after money only brings us poverty and anxiety and futility? He doesn't really fully answer it. But Jesus does in the New Testament. If you go, you don't have to turn to this, but if you go to Matthew 19, which has parallel passages, Mark 10 and Luke 18, Jesus meets someone who's called the rich young ruler. If people use the adjective rich to describe you, you're really rich. Right? That's not just an accent. This is a guy who's really rich. And if you remember in this interaction, this rich young ruler comes to Jesus and he says, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And if you remember, you know, Jesus tells him, "Well, what does it say in the Old Testament? What do we find in the commandments? Follow the commandments." He says, "Well, I've done all those things." If you remember what Jesus says to him next, he says, "Then give all that you have to the poor and follow me." And the rich young ruler becomes sad because he can't do that. You know, what's interesting is in that story, for the rich young ruler, wealth was the proof that he was a good man. In his mind, it was the proof of God's blessing in his life. It was the proof that he was a man who was worthy, who was valuable to oversee the kind of wealth that God would give him. He was trying to do good with it, but it was proof that he was a good person, that he was better than most. And when Jesus said, give your money to the poor and follow me, what Jesus is saying to him is, he said, it's not good enough. You might think that your money, your wealth, makes you a good person, it makes you an important person, it makes you a valuable person, that it says something about you, but it's not enough. And essentially what he says is, he says, there is a different thing that you need, a different treasure. And you know, what he says, follow me and you will have treasure in heaven. Now what Jesus is saying is, he's saying there's a different way to amass treasure. There's a different way to amass wealth. And it's not through trying to earn money here. It's through following Jesus. There's something about making your life about Jesus, not about money, that will actually make you rich. It will make you rich in a way that is far beyond what this world can offer. And you know, that's the wealth that we need. No matter how much you amass in this life, how much money, how much wealth, it will never last. You can never take it with you. It will never bring purpose. It will never bring meaning. It will never fulfill you. But Jesus can. And he says, when you follow him, there's a treasure beyond the treasure. There is something that you will accrue and earn and build up, that maybe you live in poverty here, but when you die, then you'll be rich. And you see, that's the treasure we need. The treasure that will actually fill us up. A treasure that will actually bring satisfaction and contentment. A treasure that will actually fill us with joy. And he says, you find that treasure only when you follow me. Now, you know, like I said in the beginning, I didn't kind of build this sermon so that we could say, okay, you know, it's important to be generous, and the Bible says a tithe, and oh, now look, it's offering. Let's pass the plates around. Let's, you know, I didn't build to do that. Like I said from the beginning, I think what the passage kind of takes us to is it challenges us to consider, to say, am I spending my life chasing after wealth, looking at wealth, at money, as my answer, as the thing that will fix the wrongs in my life, as the thing that will take care of me and my family, the thing that will give me status, power, purpose, meaning? Or do I find those things in Jesus Christ? I think that's the question that we have to ask. And if you ask yourself, if you say, you know what, I don't want money to dominate me, but why should I follow Jesus? I mean, I like the idea of not becoming kind of some person who's slavishly chasing after money, but why should it be Jesus? Again, you don't have to turn to this, but in 2 Corinthians 8, 9, we find this about Jesus. It says, though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. See, the reason why you and I should stop following money isn't just because there are problems and it leads us to poverty and unfulfillment. Now, the reason why we should follow Jesus is because Jesus was one who was rich. He had the throne of heaven. He was emblazoned with all the finest things, not just of this earth, but of all that there is. And yet Jesus loved us so much that he would leave all of his riches behind and take on poverty so that he could come and reach us who were poor and yet fill us with riches. When you have a God who loves you that much, when you have a God who loves you so much that he is willing to impoverish himself, to push everything that is of value away so that he can bring you in, then you have a God who is never going to abuse you, who is never going to do something that is bad for you. He is one who will truly bring you joy and fulfillment and fullness. And if that's who he is, then following him does mean treasure. And following him is the true wealth of our lives. Let's pray together. And Father, we do need to think about whether money and wealth, the pursuit of it has become too much in our own lives. There are so many subtle ways in which money is a more valid answer than you. We think that money will bring us ease. We think that money will alleviate our problems. We think money will make things right. And in a very subtle way, even though we know what you do, in a very subtle way, it can become our true Lord. It can captivate us more than you do. And Father, we want to remind ourselves today that money can never do the things that it promises, that it always leads us down paths of destruction. And we want to remind ourselves that you are the true treasure that we need, the one that may not directly bring us a change of lifestyle here, but one that will enrich us for all of eternity, one that will be our true joy, our true hope, and our true sense of fullness. So, Lord, expose our hearts, but then as you expose us, remind us that we have one who loves us, one who loved us so much that he would lose it all to win us. We pray all this in his name. Amen.